In your letter to Dr. Priestley of March 21st, 1801, you ask, "What an effort of bigotry in politics and religion have we gone through? The barbarians really flattered themselves. They should be able to bring back the bad times of vandalism, when ignorance put everything into the hands of power and priestcraft." Then he specifically referred to Adams, the president himself declaring that, quote, "We were never to expect to go beyond them in real science." "This sentence shall be the theme of the present letter," Adams informs him. "I have no recollection of any such sentiment ever issued from my pen." That's typical bristly Adams. "The sentiment that you have attributed to me in your letter to Dr. Priestley, I totally disclaim, and demand in the French sense of the word, demand of you the proof." Well, finally, Jefferson responds, and he's trying to be as gracious as possible, but he has a need to clarify his position. And this is from June 15th of 1813. "One of the questions, you know, on which our parties took different sides was on the improvability of the human mind in science, in ethics, in government, etc. Those who advocated reformation of institutions pari passu with the progress of science maintained that no definite limits could be assigned to that progress." And here's clearly referring to himself and the Republicans, who are, in his mind at least, the progressives. "The enemies of reform, on the other hand, denied improvement and advocated steady adherence to the principles, practices, and institutions of our fathers." And in fact, he's right. Adams had made statements like that during the war fever of the quasi-war. But then we see Jefferson's graciousness. "I do not consider this as your deliberate opinion. You possess yourself too much science not to see how much is still ahead of you, unexplained and unexplored." And then he tries to bring this to a close. He states, "I should see with reluctance the passions of that day rekindled in this, while so many of the actors are living, and all are too near the scene not to participate in sympathies with them." And then Jefferson finally goes for closure later in that month of June. And that's when he states, "The summum bonum with me is now truly Epicurean, ease of body and tranquility of mind." And what he tries to do is explain that the real differences between the parties were not just policies, were not just philosophies, but were in fact psychological differences, differences of temperament. The same political parties which now agitate the United States have existed through all time. Whether the power of the people or that of the aristoi, or aristocracy, should prevail, were questions which kept the states of Greece and Rome in eternal convulsions, as they now schismatize every people whose minds and mouths are not shut up by the gag of a despot. And in fact, the terms of Whig and Tory belong to natural as well as to civil history. They denote the temper and constitution of mind of different individuals. And again, he calls for closure. "The renewal of these old discussions, my friend, would be equally useless and irksome." And finally, Adams capitulates with bitter humor. And the reason it's bitter is because, unlike Jefferson, who wants to avoid conflict, who wants to avoid opening old wounds, Adams needs to vent. And we get this remarkable passage. "Your character and history may be easily foreseen. Your administration will be quoted by philosophers as a model of profound wisdom, by politicians as weak, superficial, and short-sighted. Mine, like Pope's woman, will have no character at all." And Adams didn't prove to be too wrong there. I mean, he was quite wrong about Jefferson, but his own administration has not really captured the imagination of the American people then or now. From there, they turned the discussion from the practice to the theory of politics. And the central issue is the problem of aristocracy. Adams writes, "Your aristoi, or aristocrats, are the most difficult animals to manage of anything in the whole theory and practice of government, because they employ the commonalty to knock to pieces every plan and model that the most honest architects in legislation can invent to keep them within bounds." And this is Adams' perennial fear, that elites are so powerful that, in fact, one should constitutionally include them in government and segregate them in the Senate. And then he asks, "But who are these aristoi? Who shall judge, who shall select the choice spirits from the rest of the congregation? Themselves?" Now, Jefferson believed in natural aristocracy, an aristocracy of virtue and talent. But as Adams points out, birth and wealth together have prevailed over virtue and talents in all ages. The many will acknowledge no other aristoi. Your experience of this truth will not much differ from that of your old friends.